Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post-40. Created and hosted by me, journalist and author, Sam Baker. How do two sensible middle-aged broadcasters become the voices of a generation of pissed-off older women? My guests today can tell you all about that. Fee Glover and Jane Garvey were off-air colleagues who turned their on-air sensible reputations as host of The Listening Project and Women's Hour, respectively, on their heads when they launched a teeny-weeny little podcast called Fortunately. Described as two friends chuntering waspishly, or as Fee and Jane put it, talking complete shit, it's now quite successful, according to the BBC, and a runaway success, according to their millions of listeners.
Well, I don't think I'm ever going to travel again. Do you think you're going to travel again? Mm. Lots of people kind of go, oh, no, it's passing phase, it's passing phase, you'll be back on the EasyJet next summer. Oh, I'm not so sure.
Well, you might not be. I am desperate for a sunshine break.
Yeah. I could be tempted by Greek Island.
Could you?
Even so good.
If you get kettled in a stairwell on speedy boarding for 2 hours.
Now they've written, did I say that out loud? A book that's so funny that coffee and some other not quite so pleasant stuff came out of my nose. I joined Fee and Jane in a box room by the Thames where we chuntered about friendship, being judgmental, pushing boundaries in your 50s, and why older women's voices are relevant to everyone. Amongst many other things, frankly, it was a bit like herding cats. Is there anything these two won't talk about? Is there only one way to find out?
Do you think that I'm the sensible one out of the two of us?
I do, yeah.
Interesting. I think that's very interesting, yeah. Fee thinks that she's the one who does the admin, and to be fair, that is true. We write in the book about that five-year difference in age between us, so I'm 57, and there's just a lot of the technical stuff. It doesn't come as naturally to me as it does to Fee.
Your description in the book of computer studies just really made me laugh.
That was real.
Yes.
I mean, 1981, and in school, doing computer studies, but with, crucially, no computers. And it was just half an hour on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And I never believed it. I thought, I can't see there's much future in this. Is this real? I don't think I'm going to engage. Anyway, yeah. All of which explains why Fee does all the admin in our working relationship.
Yeah. Where did it come from? What was the spark of genius that led you to podcasting? I can't think of a word that means big and successful.
Well, the BBC just says quite successful, so we'll stick with that. They don't like us getting above ourselves, do they?
No, they really don't. No. So Jane and I did a stint on stage at the Radio Festival. We hosted the Radio Festival, which is our industry shindig up in Salford, back in, I think, 2012, maybe 2013.
Yeah.
And we had quite a nice time doing it, and it was the first time that women had ever presented it. And it says so much that they couldn't just ask one woman to present it. They felt they needed two.
To hold each other's hands.
Well, just in case one of us had a period or something.
Oh, God,
like that.
Yeah.
Or just a mood.
Hormones, love hormones.
We did that quite successfully, and there was a commissioning editor in the room who obviously saw something and thought, well, they've got a bit of repartee between them. But there was then a 4-year gap between that and fortunately being a thing. And initially we were tasked with doing this. Well, actually, we both quite enjoyed it, didn't we? A podcast where we kind of reviewed bits of radio we'd heard that week.
Yeah, I think you enjoyed it more than me, because the only problem was we had to review programmes on Radio 4. Really, that's what Radio 4 wanted. That's why it's called, fortunately,
yes,
Radio 4.
For Radio 4.
It annoyed me slightly that they thought we couldn't just talk to each other. There had to be a format that made it slightly more rigid.
Was that a radio mentality, though?
I think it's radio and women, because Fee talks about us being the first women to do the radio festival. If you look at the picture, which if you're a radio anorak and I am, it's quite significant, the picture of the Radio 1 DJs on the steps of All Souls Church back in 1967... not a woman to be seen, just this collection of young white men, and they were relatively young. I think some of them were well into their late 30s even then.
Is that the Tony Blackburn
days? Yeah, the Tony Blackburn days, yeah. And
sorry, kids, you won't know who Tony Blackburn is.
No, you should learn, though.
No, don't Google him.
He's extremely successful. He's had thousands of lovers.
And he's still going.
He is still going.
On air.
He is a legend. Yeah. Nothing against Tony Blackburn. And it isn't insignificant in our broadcasting lives that Annie Nightingale was this incredible figure who did. She was a Radio 1 presenter, but she was the only one, wasn't she, when we were growing
up? Yeah, for a long time, for about 20 years, she was the only female voice on air. So I think they felt that, you know, we needed a maypole to dance around. But we might be wrong in that, Jane, because they might just have always been yearning to do a radio review programme, just waiting for the right sharp-minded, esoteric audio aficionados to come along and do it.
So you can take your voice of reason hat off.
Yeah, just occasionally.
She's so reasonable.
But then the funny bit of fortunately turned out to be Jane and I chatting with each other. Mm. So then we got to drop the radio bits and just talk to each other. And Jane and I are not being deliberately kind of self-effacing or indulging in a humble brag by saying that is all that there is to fortunately, because that is all that there is to fortunately.
But that's its genius.
It's people. And the thing that's been so wonderful, I think, is proving that two women just shooting the breeze together is good.
It's interesting.
Yes. And so the things that we talk about and the kind of true north that we always end up in, which is domestic, emotional, I think just kind of kind, actually, you know, that's a sound that wasn't really out there on lots of podcasts. And I think, you know, I don't ever want to speak for Jane because it doesn't go well when I try. We both came through local radio and then onto national radio in quite a kind of tight uniform, didn't we, of what women had to sound like in radio. Mm. And for both of us, I think it's quite liberating to suddenly not have to do that. And that's about what you say, and it really is about how you say it, isn't it?
Yes, there is quite literally no planning that goes into fortunately.
So you've not got, you don't even go in with like a screwed up bunch of notes like I've got here that notes. I won't look at. But it's almost the writing of the notes.
No. And I think...
Not like a little theme, you don't get arts.
Themes, that's a good idea. Would you like to take up, be a producer on it? That would be great. Yeah. No, we absolutely don't. Quite deliberately, we don't. And actually, it's strength. I mean, some would also say that that's the weakness, and that's why, obviously, staggeringly, the majority of people in Britain have still chosen not to listen to Fortunately. Can't understand it. But those who do listen, well, they are. I don't think they would engage with it quite so enthusiastically if they did think that we had a list of this week's suggested topics for Fortunately.
This week's gags.
And this week's things we can be funny about. I mean, sometimes I do bring a sort of pathetic clipping from a newspaper or something like that. That's something that's made me laugh. But on the whole, we don't bother. You know, shit happens. Shit's happened to both of us during the course of Fortunately's life. It can be mind-bogglingly trivial, or it can be really quite life-changing. And on the whole, we've talked about it as honestly as we can without revealing too much about other people who certainly don't want their privacy to be invaded.
How big is your little audience?
Well, the podcast itself has had millions of downloads. Yeah. I mean, over 22 million downloads of the watch. Just as I say that is...
Yes, not little.
It's not little. No, but Fee meant in the great scheme of things, we understand that podcast audiences are smaller than live radio audiences, but they're a very different, very dedicated bunch of people who have elected to listen and to be part of your club and to listen
and
with
spend
their...
spend half an hour with you every...
Every week, yeah.
At a time of their choosing.
Yeah.
Which I think really, really, really really adds to the nature of podcasts and why you can get away with sounding very different. Because you're absolutely with people when they choose to be with you. And you don't have to do that. I'm on late night radio, so I'm going to be slightly saucy. I'm on early morning radio, so I'm going to be very bright and cheerful. Or, you know, I'm on lunchtime radio, but things may change and my career might look up eventually, but you don't have to do any of that. So it doesn't enter our heads to kind of be something other than, you know, just stuck in our respective rooms on opposite sides of London, trying to keep each other's pecker up.
Yes.
Were you friends before? Because
I couldn't stand us.
Seriously.
The truth is we were friendly. Which isn't quite the same thing. And also, we were competitive because, and this is not a good thing, and I'm sure I'm to blame, I think. Women were still a rarity in broadcasting. Things have changed so much for the better in the last 5-10 years. But Fee and I, when we were both at Five Live together, I did drive time and Fee did mid-mornings, didn't you?
Yeah, and nearly every other show, actually, apart from Sport on Five. There were legal reasons for that. but Jane was very much the queen of Five Live.
Very much.
Because, you know, she launched the station and she's quite regal. And so when I arrived there, which was a couple of years down the line from when it had launched, it's not that we ever kind of
we didn't really see each other.
Our paths just didn't cross, and they don't on radio stations because you pitch up and do your show, the time slot that it's on, and then you disappear. You're not kind of in an office all day. You know, I just always really admired Jane, and I'm not just saying that now, or, you know, because you're in the room, but we wouldn't have had a chance to kind of be friends. The first time that we actually properly sat down and had a really good chat was in the dressing room at the radio festival.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Which was 15 years after we'd first met.
But I do remember, very clear memory of 9/11. If you were in broadcasting on that day, you are going to remember it. If you were anyone on that day. And I had done a show on Five Live and Fee came on. I think I walked out of the room and you came and did the next 18 hours of rolling news on that day. So sometimes we need to remind people we are news broadcasters.
Oh, we did a lot of it, Jimmy.
Yeah, we did do a lot of it. And this is great. And I love, fortunately, but our ability to do it, if you like, comes from a journalistic background where we have actually been out and we've done. I mean, I once had to judge a baby show, for example, in rural Worcestershire in my local radio days.
Yes, but you've also interviewed Hillary Clinton.
And I've interviewed Hillary Clinton.
A lot of the biggies. Nick Bryant said something really lovely when he was on the podcast that Jane and I both got quite a hard time when we joined Radio 4. I had to go on feedback to talk about how difficult it was when you joined Radio 4, when Jane was having a hard time joining Radio 4. But Nick Bryant said a lovely thing, that actually what we took from Five Live to Radio 4 was the ability to do news in a way that maybe wasn't as formal as
you
had been done. I would never say that.
Rigid, I think, is what it is.
And a lot of that is down to Jane, because that was her kind of tone, you know, on the station. So is that enough being nice? Because I've got dirt on her as well.
Yeah, can you just stop being nice? Because I've had 15 minutes of you two behaving yourself, and that is not what I'm here for, thank you.
Well, we know where each other's bodies are buried.
Oh, God.
But that's the joy of a decent friendship as well, isn't it? It would be an odd friendship if we didn't know any of the kind of dark side of each
other. That's why people love the podcast, isn't it? Because to everybody who loves it, it's like listening to a conversation they might have themselves.
Yes. I totally get that. And that's what we want. Because some weeks we just talk complete shit. And sometimes you will see one of your best mates and just talk complete shit.
Yeah.
Or you'll be horrible to her. And you don't really mean it. But it's your way of showing... I'm backing myself here. It's your way of showing affection.
But also, you don't have to win every conversation.
No, don't you?
With a friend.
Oh, okay.
No, you don't have to win every conversation with a friend.
Genuinely, I think, you know, the last couple of years, the last 18 months, have been pretty dreadful for just about everybody. And
sure have.
I think probably I've never listened as keenly to all sorts of radio and podcasts in my life. So it's been a lifeline for me. So I do get why people have enjoyed what we've been doing, because I mean, I don't get the same enjoyment out of listening to us, because that would be really
that would be really weird. Can you imagine that, going out on the piss with your friends and then going home and playing it back?
No, we're not that bad.
We could do a drunk, unfortunately, couldn't we?
Not Frank Skinner.
No.
Trick.
Something I am aware of is that because people listen in quite intimate circumstances to podcasts, you know, they can be in the bath or they can be having their earbuds in their ears late at night, or they're on a walk, they hear everything. And that can include my slightly funny noises that I've started to make, involuntary funny noises.
Yeah, so we got a complaint, didn't we, yeah, this week, that Jo quite often smacks her lips.
I smack my lips a bit like I've just
done,
I think.
Did you? Oh, I'll have to listen.
And actually, once you notice, you can't stop noticing.
So you did have a very specific involuntary noise.
Yes, do it, do it.
In season one.
Really?
I love calling it season one. It's so American.
I know, it's like
season
strange.
One. Usually, as I was talking, or the guests would be talking, you would just be in the background just going,
yeah. Well, that's the woman's hour encouraging grunt.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
You are trained to do that in your first weeks on the hour.
Without actually saying anything, but to keep the conversation.
Just keep it coming. Yeah, absolutely.
I've definitely heard you do that in women's hour.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the smacking lips. I've been listening out for it, but I haven't caught it yet.
I don't think you get smacking lips from women's hour, to be fair.
No.
But is there anything you won't talk about?
I talk about my children a bit, but I try not to talk about them too much. Because, you know, they...
It embarrasses them.
And they are 21 and 18, so they're of an age, and they've never heard it, as far as I know. They've certainly never said they have. Equally, they never listened to Woman's Hour either. So, and the other night, I was watching a documentary about 9/11 with my youngest daughter, and she said, "What do you remember about that day?" And I said, "Well, I was on the radio." You know, she said, "What? Why?" And sometimes you think, okay, I've been alive a very long time, and sometimes, why would they be interested? Obviously, they're not. I've got family complications like the rest of the population. You know, nobody has a perfect life. I certainly don't have one. And I make it clear that I haven't got one. Our audience deserve us to be as authentic as we can be without oversharing.
Mm. And also, there's the right to reply thing, because although, yeah. I mean, my kids wouldn't listen to the podcast, they're too young, but, you know, a podcast will live in an archive forever and ever and ever. So it's not even the now that you should be worried about. You know, when they're in their, you know, 30s and 40s, they might not want to be reminded of things that they did when they were younger. So I think we're both quite circumspect about that.
What about personal stuff? Is there anything you wouldn't talk about?
Well, I mean, I think if it involves pus and emitting, I'm loath to go there.
I think we talk about pus and emitting, don't we?
I think we probably have done that.
Yes, I think we have.
But if you mean personal relationships, Sam?
I am single, and I've said that on the podcast, and I still am, so I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I think if that were to change, I'd be so hesitant about mentioning it. I mean, that would put the mockers on absolutely anything. So the Daily Mail are listening for that.
Yeah, and they always, you know, they do pick up on the slightest kind of hint. But I don't think our listeners are listening because they want to, you know absolutely everything about us. They're listening because we're all talking about the same things, really.
Yeah.
So I would be exactly the same. And also, again, it's just that right to reply thing, back to being a journalist. And it's an interesting development, isn't it? That there is a lot more conversation about people who do not, at that time, have the right to reply. And I just find it very difficult to start talking about somebody who wasn't in the room. I know it's wrong. In journalistic sense, it's wrong. Mm. We just shouldn't ever be doing that.
Yeah, only tell your own story.
I have lightly mocked my ex-husband, who, by the way, wouldn't mind, and it's always been cut out. Very sensibly, I should say. We've got brilliant producers who are very, very good at actually taking out the stuff that might cause even the slightest ruction with either the BBC. They're doing their job, aren't they? Yes. So we're not angry with them.
I suppose it's a BBC podcast, isn't it? So you've still got to...
The BBC are amazing, actually, at not interfering. I mean, we both slag off the BBC quite a lot on the podcast. They allow us to do that, which does speak volume. Also, they have never said, now it's your job to G up the nation, so don't be all negative about the lockdown. Nobody's ever said that. In fact, to be fair, I've interviewed prime ministers and nobody from the BBC has ever tried to steer the conversation in a certain direction or ask what we were going to ask or anything like it. It just doesn't happen. So knock the BBC all you like, but it's pretty amazing in lots of ways. And we all, like everyone else, found the lockdown very difficult and frightening and said so. I remember just sitting on the sofa watching the Prime Minister saying that no one should leave their house.
Yeah.
I mean, this...
It was so odd that night, wasn't
really
it?
Really odd. Yeah.
It was really odd. And I was actually in my brother's house because we'd sold our house and we hadn't yet moved into our new one. And there we stayed for the next 4 months.
Oh, my God. So.
But it was weird, wasn't it? It was like being in a film or something. It's like, do not go to work tomorrow. Do not leave the house. Do not.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
There was a level of kind of adrenaline and cortisol flowing through everybody's veins, wasn't there, during that first lockdown?
I really felt that adrenaline thing. Yeah. I've never felt it in my life, really, except occasionally at work. But there were weird mornings when I'd set off and try and find toilet roll.
She's still doing that now.
No, I'm not. I'm not doing that now.
You know, you find yourself like buying a pack and then texting your friends going, found some, should I get you a pack too?
I just don't have the hoarding thing at all. And in fact, we were skating on thin ice in terms of provisions in our household for a long time during those lockdowns.
You were popular. So you ran out of loo roll?
I think we were probably down to loo roll alternatives at one stage.
Yeah.
Local corner shop near my brother's had got to a point where they were cutting kitchen rolls in half.
Yes, I did have to cut some kitchen roll.
Oh,
and I did at one stage eye up my sewing basket and thought, well,
eye up my sewing.
But we got through it.
How have you changed being 50-something?
Somebody else asked us this. Sorry to be really boring. I actually don't care.
You're closer to 60, which is just...
Oh, God. I mean, I know it's true.
I think that's a bigger thing than 50.
Well, thanks a bunch. No, well, actually...
I love being in my 50s, but...
Yeah, I think I'm very fortunate with my health. You know, look, you cannot take that for granted, especially now. I'm probably making more of a conscious effort to stay fit, so Fee will now take the piss. But I do get up every morning and I do go out full stop.
Gets up every morning. Because it used to be just once a week.
I conduct all my business. I did woman's hour from my bed for years and nobody noticed. Actually, you probably could, and nobody would notice. Anyway, I get up and I go for a walk and I try to eat reasonably healthily. I don't really drink much. I mean, I love a glass of champagne, but I really don't have very much of it. I mean, that's one of the good things about my taste being very expensive is that I can't drink. And I'm aware, you know, unfortunately, I've got friends who are ill at the moment. So I know that you cannot take anything for granted. But whilst I'm okay, and my mum and dad are still okay, which is also probably quite significant, they're 88 and 87. I look at them and I think, is their life terrible? Fortunately for them and for me, no. They've still got a reasonable quality of life. And professionally...
I've never been busier.
Well, actually, yeah. I haven't. Yeah. So
has fortunately changed that. Do you think? I mean, and not that you didn't have a bloody massive job before.
I mean, people thought Woman's Hour was a massive job. I did it part-time, don't forget, because Jenny Murray and I never did Woman's Hour full-time. We shared it. And effectively, I was a sort of civil servant with a microphone. It was an amazing programme to do. I'm really proud of it, and I will defend it forever. I'm not going to be one of those people who leaves the programme and then says, it's rubbish, and it's gone downhill.
Because you miss it.
I do miss it. I miss the routine of it is what I miss, actually. Mm. I've got some great friends who worked on the programme, but I still see them. So I still see my friends from the programme. And I miss that buzz of waking up, going out, grabbing a coffee, us all sitting around in the office and chatting about what we might have on the programme or how we might change it. Mm. And it's a programme with, frankly, a huge audience. But it really, really needed to change. And I was very aware that it couldn't change with me still hanging around. Because you mentioned age, and actually I think my age was significant in terms of doing Woman's Hour. I didn't want to be the person who'd hung around too long on the programme. Mm. I wanted to be the woman who realised that she'd probably done as much as she possibly could to bring in a different audience. So now it was someone else's turn. And, I mean, I still listen. It's got different sort of fire in its belly, and that's what it needed.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Funny enough, it gave me a lot of free time. I only ever did it 3 or 2 days a week. And there was some weeks, especially when the kids were at school, when I'd think, what am I going to do now? Shall I have a look at that book about ferns? you know, that sort of thing. So had fortunately not been a success, I probably would have stayed at Woman's Hour. But because I thought, oh, actually, maybe there are other things I can do. And neither Fee nor I are the kind of broadcaster that needs a script, frankly, or a structure because of our local radio experience. Mm. You're used to just talking, aren't you?
For hours as well. You know, we've been doing long shows for a very long time.
Very long.
Very long.
So, sorry, that was a very long answer to your question.
What was the question?
It was just about how your career has changed in your 50s.
Oh, okay. Do I have to answer it now?
Yeah.
I just wouldn't want anyone to think you get to 50, you're 52, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're busier than you.
Yes, oh, yeah. No, definitely. I will be eternally grateful, fortunately, because I stopped doing what I think we'd just call kind of frontline A-grade programmes when my kids were tiny. So I stopped doing Saturday Live when my son first went to school, because my entire working life, so by that stage 25 years of my working life, had been out of normal hours. So, you know, I'd done breakfast shows, weekend breakfast shows, late night shows, late Sunday night shows, then I'd done Broadcasting House on Sunday morning, and then Saturday Live. And actually I realized that I'd never lived in a normal world, in a normal routine. And when the kids went to school, I really just wanted to be a normal parent at the weekends, not going to work all the time. So I dipped out of that. So for the 6 years after stopping doing that, I'd done the Listening Project and lots of bits and pieces at Radio 4, and then created this programme over on the World Service. So it was all ticking along really nicely. I had no complaints at all. And it was just really important that family life kind of fitted in to all of that. But for fortunately to come along and be so just joyful, actually, just a really, really lovely, joyful thing to do, you know, in my late 40s, it's just been wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And I properly love radio and the industry and everything about it. So to still be doing something that's kind of at the forefront of it and new is glorious as well. But I think some of that comes from us being in our 50s. It's quite funny that two slightly older women are pushing a boundary and at a frontier. And I think probably for lots of our listeners who are the same age as us, they're really proud of us for doing that.
Totally.
And for lots of younger listeners, and we do have quite a lot of them, they're grateful that we're in their world, because otherwise it would just be endless podcasts talking about sex. You know, there's something quite strange about the way that when everybody discovered podcasting and put the algorithms together and tied it into the youth advertising market, it seemed to be blowjobs that came, you know, out as the agenda. And of course, that's not what young people are. How reductive is that? So I love being in my 50s and still in relevant audio work. Absolutely can't quite believe it. And I'm very grateful.
You were saying earlier about how, you know, there are a lot more women on the radio. I mean, you just got to look at Radio 2. Do you think we're going to start to see that reflected at the older end as well?
God, yes. Because the women who are on air now are really good. Why would they go?
The BBC and other broadcasters set a precedent by keeping elderly men on for a very long time. I mean, it's true, you know, that Angela Rippon was told by John Burt that when she got to 50, she should push off now. It's amazing. That wasn't even that long ago.
When was that?
It's 20 years ago, because Angela's, she's in her early 70s, maybe
That's
70.
Really not very long ago. That was this century, almost.
I happen to have the same agent as Angela, so I know that's true. And it's just, how bloody dare he?
Yeah.
But people did. That's what they did.
But those double standards, that kind of silver fox, that men get promoted, women get vanished.
Sidelined,
They can't do it anymore. They just can't.
I think there's a certain type of woman who's needed to be incredibly determined and good and thoughtful to work in broadcasting. And that's not the type of woman who's going to go quietly if someone tries to sweep the shelf off them. So now I hope it doesn't change. And also, do you know what, Sam? Older women have got things to say that are relevant and important, not just to their peer group.
Mm.
We haven't lived our life in a golf club bar just talking only to people who look like us. We've raised children.
Thank God.
You know, we've been sisters. We've been decent children to our parents. You know, I think a woman's life touches loads and loads and loads of other people's lives, perhaps in a way that isn't always the case with men. So I think we have things to say. And I would hope that, you know, that that keeps us on air as well. I mean, it would be a terrible, wouldn't it be extraordinary if, I don't know, if a Lauren Laverne or a Zoe Ball or a Joe Wiley was out the door at the age of 60. I mean, I just can't see
just
that
unthinkable.
Happening yeah. now. So I hope the boundaries are changed forever.
Ken Bruce yeah. is now, I mean, he's brilliant.
He's over 70.
He's over 70.
Yeah.
And he's got the biggest radio show
and
in
he
Europe.
Still sounds fantastic.
He loves doing it and he sounds like he does and that's great.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, I'd love to still be listening to Jo Wiley when she's in her 70s. She's just got so much expertise. She's just a beautiful presence.
She understands music.
Why wouldn't you want to just hear more and more of that?
So we'll talk about the book and then we got to do my questions I always ask.
Okay.
Tell us about the book then. I love the title. Actually, I love
that. Oh, that's annoying because that's Fee's idea.
Oh,
okay,
sorry.
I wanted to call it something else, but never mind,
what
not
did
something
you want
else.
To do?
Well, I had Small Talk was the working title, wasn't it? And Fee doesn't even remember, she's blanked that out. Then I liked What Have I Said?
That's quite good, but it's a similar vibe to Did I Say That? Out
yes, it's a similar vibe, Sam. It's just better. Anyway, they went with Fee's idea and irritatingly,
but
I
you're
know.
You're not competitive anyway.
No, not at all. I think you're right. I think it is a really good title. It came about because, well, largely, almost entirely, because of the persistence of a literary agent called Victoria Hobbs, who I think you knew anyway, didn't you?
Well, she was a fortunately listener and she got in touch, to use your favourite expression.
She did, yes.
And said, do you think you've got a book inside you?
Yeah.
To which both of us, we preened ourselves and went, oh, we couldn't possibly.
Oh, when can we meet? Busy. But I think we did meet and turned it down and then had a rethink, didn't we?
Yes, we did actually, for lots of reasons. It took us about a year to kind of gather
ourselves.
I think
ourselves. It's more than that, Mrs, to be honest.
Was it more?
And I think I realised that I wanted to leave Woman's Hour and realised that this would be a really good thing to have to concentrate on. And then the lockdown in January, February and March was when we wrote this.
It was
this.
Perfectly timed.
Yeah. To be fair, we are relatively busy with domestic commitments as well as work. I mean, without being most it is harder for women to find the time in their life to write a book.
Yeah.
And we've only written half a book each. And so we both love reading. We just both love books. So I didn't want to write a crap book. And I thought I could probably write a reasonably good half of a book. I just needed to find a friend who could write the other half.
So basically, I'm therapy, aren't I? I'm therapy Fee in the corner.
Yeah.
The only having written half a book thing is actually really important because I wouldn't have had the time. So I'm at home, I'm a single co-parent and I've got two teenagers. And during lockdown, because both of them were at home so much and, you know, continued periods of self-isolation, even when the schools went back, I would never have had the time to write a whole book myself. And I wouldn't have had the concentration or the kind of ability to do it. So writing half a book each, and what we did is a chapter by Jane that I respond to, a chapter by me that Jane responds to, and we did this thing. So you've got to imagine that you're in a 1960s spy thriller in the Cold War and you've got Russia at one end of the bridge and America at the other end of the bridge, and every Monday morning we would come and place our work in the centre of the bridge for the other one to take away.
But it was
that
difficult.
Also made you do it.
It absolutely
really made us,
and also I genuinely really looked forward to reading Jane's stuff, and because I needed that stimulus to then go, oh no, I don't agree with that, blah, 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 blah. And that was so much easier to write than if we'd just had a kind of list of topics. You know, if we just said we're just going to write an essay.
We didn't actually
this.
Discuss which ones we were going
we
to write.
Did, no,
we didn't discuss that either.
So it was just like the podcast. It was just like
doing it and off you went.
The only chapter that we were told to write was the one about podcasting, which is at the end. But the rest of it was just things that were on our mind. And one thing we were certain about was that we didn't really want to write about the menopause. I mean, I believe the menopause is very important and I've talked about it a lot on Woman's Hour. It has been a bit of a thing for me, which is why I'm on HRT and I'm, you know, perfectly happy to talk about that. But I just didn't think I had anything new or helpful to say on the subject, apart from, that's my tip, if you've got issues, try and get a doctor's appointment. Good luck with that, by the way.
Yeah.
And then try and get HRT. Mm. Good luck with that too, with the supply issues. And
it
I know
it needs a chapter on it.
It doesn't not, really, that is my chapter.
It doesn't really fit the vibe.
Well, the vibe was just, here we are,
chatting about some things that interest us, and we don't agree on everything. You know, we don't agree on everything in real life, and we don't agree on everything in the book.
Did you agree on what the chapters should be?
Did you just
write a really short reply if you didn't agree with what she'd written?
Yes, exactly that.
Too much that, I think.
Yeah. And also, they are slightly unexpected topics. So I think maybe the ones that you would expect us to have written are the chapters about broadcasting. That would probably be a given. We've also written chapters about our divorces. Not from each other. We're not a couple, Sam. We've never been married.
Maybe that's where you've gone wrong.
Yeah, but I don't think it's as uncomplicated as people make out, is it?
No. We've written stuff about, a bit about travel. I don't think I'm ever going to travel again. Do you think you're going to travel again? Lots of people kind of go, oh, no, it's passing phase. It's passing phase. You'll be back on the EasyJet next summer. I'm not so sure.
Well, you might not be. I am desperate for a sunshine break.
Yeah, I could be tempted by Greek Island.
Could you?
I so could.
If you get kettled in a stairwell on speedy boarding for 2 hours at a random UK airport.
I think I am prepared to take that risk, actually.
Are you? Okay.
Fee has written a very funny chapter about her stay at a wellness institute.
Oh, I did. I went to a wellness facility. It made me so angry. It brought out absolutely every single thing.
How much did that actually cost?
It did cost, as I've said in the book, I could have bought a small second-hand car that admittedly wouldn't have lasted very long. So I went to this wellness facility because I felt that my body just needed a bit of a break, actually, because I'd had quite an emotional roller coaster of a couple of years. And I also just really wanted to go on holiday on my own, but not feel grotesquely out on a limb being on holiday by myself, because, you know, I was single by then. And I didn't want to go anywhere where there were lots of kids and lovely families and, you know, Johnny saying, oh, Daddy, come over here and, you know, look at my sandcastle. Yeah. I wanted to look into the eyes of other sad and lonely people. So I paid through the nose for that privilege. And boy, I mean, on that front, it didn't disappoint. It pulled me up a bit, actually, because I think all of that wellness, and, you know, this is a massive chapter in the book, is very persuasive, invasive. I'm not quite sure in the first world we realise how far we've departed from a realistic sense of contentment. And I was definitely kind of sliding down that road of promise, where people were promising, you know, that all of these good things would happen to me. And, you know, I found myself surrounded by people who just had extremely expensive self-inflicted diarrhoea. It was just ridiculous. So it's stuff like that in the book. It's not very serious, but there are serious things along the way.
I really love the chapter about being judgmental as well, and that whole you're no better than you ought to be thing.
Well, I felt I did want to write that because, you know, I have that awful snivelling aspect of my personality. I know I do. I don't like it. I don't like it in myself, and I purport to greatly dislike it in others and disapprove of it. But the truth is, I think it's partly a generational thing. I don't think I'm as...
It's a 70s childhood thing.
I think it really is,
you're
I'm afraid.
You ought to be.
Yes, and that idea of, you know, who do you think you are? And who does she think she is? And the state of... I mean, in Liverpool, it was at the state of it. Look at the state of it. All of that. So the Daily Mail, I sometimes read columns by some of their female columnists and think, oh my God, how did she... Is she in my head? Officially, I can't stand it. But I also know that there's a part of me that agrees with some of that stuff.
I think both of you are wildly optimistic to put that in the bin of history. I think that's what underlies everything that we're seeing in front of us at the moment, but it's just in a bikini with a spray tan. But that's what you're being asked to think, isn't it? Oh, she's not quite it, or she's a bit above herself, or it's always about
judging.
But as
long as we keep on playing that game, men are going to benefit, aren't they?
Yes, and they are the winners.
Yeah, they're always going to be the winners. And I think I just wanted to own up to that part of myself, which I'm not proud of at all.
You go in on it, so you like lay that out there.
Yes,
right at the
I'm a dreadful, judgmental old bag.
She's actually quite kind as well, Sam. That's, you know, it would be easier if she was just really hard-nosed, nasty piece of work. And she's quite nice sometimes, which is disarming.
It's quite disarming.
It is
disconcerting, really.
Very.
To both of you, what's your emotional age?
Good question. 27.
Why? Just out of interest.
I genuinely don't think that I've made any good emotional decisions since I was 27.
God, did you make good decisions then?
I think I did. Really strangely, I think I did.
Are you sure?
Yes. Well, I think my life in a way was a bit more upright when I was 27. Parts of it are very dilapidated.
Yeah, Fee's, can I say, Fee is quite rackety. Whereas I'm much more of a
pillar. You're a very firm pillar, darling.
Oh, God, I wish I was more like her, to be honest. But
sometimes I definitely have the ill-conceived thoughts of a 27-year-old as well, to put that into balance. See, I'm going 27.
What about you?
I would probably say 15, 16. I honestly don't think I've progressed. Sorry. I'm still quite cocky and also a nervous wreck at the same time. You know, I'd like to get rid of both of those aspects of my passes for my personality, but I don't seem able to do it. So I'm here to tell you, people who are younger than 57, that you don't really change.
No.
I remember my grandmother lived with us growing up, and that was quite significant in lots of ways. And, you know, she was pretty elderly by the time she died. She was 80, 83. And I remember her telling me when I was a teenager that she looked in the mirror and she'd just think, well, who is that old woman? And I said, well, who do you think you are, Nana? And she said, well, I still feel 15 in my head. And I wonder whether that has just lodged in me too. But I know exactly what she meant.
Yeah.
I've been reading some of my teenage diaries, and honestly, haven't changed.
They're brilliant, her teenage diaries. Does anyone ever say a really old age in answer to that question?
People have said, like, both 15 and 60.
Okay.
Yeah, and people do say that they kind of felt like they've been coming into their own in their 40s.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I say that in the book, that I'm much more suited to middle age than to youth.
Yeah.
I really am. So maybe I'm wrong about being 15. I think it's the lack of certainty that I associate with being 15. But the contentment that can come with middle age, if you're fortunate, and it's quite a big if.
Yeah.
I've always been good at contentment. I've always been somebody who can sit down and think, I've got a cup of tea and I've got a good book. Did I say that out loud, for example, is a good book? If you want to hear. It's a great gift if you are able. I appreciate a lot of people, they can't reach for that little bit of contentment. They just can't get there. I've always been able to do that. And that's an incredible bonus in life if you have it. I refuse to see middle age as terrible. You think a bit differently about old age, don't you? Because you say that.
Well, I just think once you've lost a parent or both parents, your notion of old age just is different, actually. I mean, it's very telling that your parents are still alive and together and, you know,
Ticking along.
And also, Jane, I mean, remarkable that neither of them have been extremely unwell. You know, that says a lot for the Crosby air.
I mean, I'm sure they're very grateful for it too.
But also your vision of old age just hasn't been knocked for six. It's still in front of you. Obviously, I'm not the only person to say this, but if you lose a parent at a younger age, your timeline of your future just changes. And I don't imagine, and I have written a whole chapter of the book, I don't imagine myself having a long old age, because all of my father's siblings and family, you know, died very suddenly and relatively young. So I think that changes my middle age as well. Because I don't think there's kind of 30 years of glorious going up the Danube the wrong way on a cruise ship. You know,
is there a right way to go?
Devoted silver fox. Somebody once told me that those cruises go the wrong way up the Danube, and it was just one of those things that really stuck.
It's like one of those sexual practices young people do a podcast about, doesn't it?
It does.
God, I'm not at that age.
It sounds like something peculiar to Austria. But I am enjoying my 50s. Oh my gosh, so much more than...
What do you think is harder? What's the worst decade?
Oh, I would not go back to my 40s. Two tiny children, a weirdly kind of precipitous career and jobs. I was tired all the time in my 40s.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think the tired all the time thing is so hard when you've got your kids, God.
Yeah.
So the current stage I'm at does seem slightly better.
There was just a stretch... 40s,
everything
was a stretch.
The book is, it's as Sam was rather cruelly pointed out, listeners, she did say earlier, it's not War and Peace, which took our breath away.
I think we were wounded.
Much more interesting than War and Peace.
We were holed below the waterline,
It's about reports.
There'll be repercussions on social media.
Yes, don't worry. It's a dip in and curl up sort of a book, isn't it?
If you've got a large family bag of chili nuts and the evenings are drawing in and there's no more Vera on the telly, then this, I think, will give you at least 17 minutes of joy.
I would have thought so.
I think it will be filling a lot of stories.
And there's the audio book as well.
We really enjoyed doing the audiobook. Yeah. We really did. And how embarrassing it would have been if we'd been unable to do that.
And they'd ask someone else to do it.
Pull that off.
Well, actually, it was a struggle because we had to read out loud, which we're not...
Do you know what would be quite funny? Just as a bit of an extra bonus one, if we ever wrote another book together, I think we should get John Humphreys and Edward Sturton to voice up our audiobook.
Do you think we could do that?
Just a chapter.
That is actually a genius idea.
That would be quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Find that one. Brilliant. Yeah.
I'm going to make you answer two more of the questions.
Yes. Yeah.
Who is your old bird role model?
Old bird role model, Chrissy Hynde.
I have to say, only because I had lunch with her on Saturday. And
such
I
just, a name drop. Jenny, just let's try and guess this. Would it be Princess Anne?
God, no. I met her and she was quite rude. No, Gillian Reynolds. Only because Gillian is a Scouser, as it happens. She's been, unfortunately. She was the radio critic of The Guardian. She worked at The Telegraph. She's worked at The Sunday Times. And she is 85 now, and I don't think she'd mind being referred to as an old bird. She's just fantastic company. She just knows so much stuff.
She's a very good egg as well.
Yeah, she's a really good egg. Yeah. She's a good woman, and she's just somebody. If I could be like her, if I could be as curious as her, just as still asking questions, and still interested when I get to 85.
Then. Just alive as well, Jane.
And alive.
Yeah.
I'd settle for that. Yeah.
Anybody who's read your chapter in the book will understand you saying that.
Yes.
Last one. How many fucks do you give?
Absolutely none. Not even if they're flying. Just could not give a toss anymore.
I want to be more like that, but I'm probably still giving a bit of one. But that's the difference between us.
One of many differences between us, Jane.
Yes, okay. But as I think we do say in the book, a lot of BBC management figures still can't tell us apart.
Oh my God.
They'll be fuming when they find out these two identical women have written a book.
They will, but then you're in the building more than me, so they'll bollock you and I'll get off scot-free.
I thought of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Right.
On that note, you are released.
Thank you so much.
I'm only jiggling around because I need the loo.
That was very lovely.
Thank you for listening. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each Tuesday on Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review, and follow, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to know more about my own experience of shifting, my book, The Shift, How I Lost and Found Myself After 40, and You Can Too, is out now in paperback. See you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.